The drug companies and health insurance industry are trying to scare us about the high cost of health care reform. The same companies who increased co-payments on life-saving drugs. The same companies who made cost rise 120% in 9 years. The insurance industry knows that the biggest wasteful cost in health care is the insurance industry. So they're spending millions on lobbying and advertising to try to kill the public option. What are they really worried about? Your medical cost? Or their profits. Don't fall for it.
England adopted a national health care system on this day in 1948 to assure that all English citizens, regardless of immigration status, can enjoy comprehensive medical care free of charge. As detailed in the recent film by American filmmaker Michael Moore, a majority of industrialized nations consider health care to be a right, not a privilege that only those who can afford it can have access to. In these countries, the costs of health care are borne by the government and are funded through tax revenues. Contrary to popular myth, citizens in countries with universal health care are free to choose their own doctors and often receive services of much higher quality than those offered in countries with private, for-profit health care systems, according to the World Health Organization.
Poor people gonna rise up. Take what's there, 'cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution.
This Week in Radical History for the week starting June 29th is produced at Glee Glee Studios. Inspiration for the show came from the Slingshot organizer, and much of the rad info can be found in the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website.
Fight for power! Come on!
Yo, check this out, man.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes.
And starting on June 29th, 1898, Michael Schraub dies. He served over 6 years in prison for charges related to the anarchist Haymarket affair before he was pardoned by the governor. Hospitalized with tuberculosis, Schraub was released just months ago. He was actually a fortunate one, for six anarchists would be hung in Chicago and also pardoned after the fact. Also on June 29, 1954, Guatemala, democratically elected President Guzman, successfully overthrown by the CIA-sponsored revolution. As the U.S. B-26 bombers, covertly piloted by Americans, turned a tide in the operations, one that sank a British freight loader with coffee and cotton, which was mistakenly suspected of carrying arms to the government. U.S. Secretary of State John Foster Dulles announces the coup a successful block to Soviet plot to establish a nesting place in the Americas. Yeah, right. The new U.S. military junta orders the arrest of all communist and labor activists.
John Foster Dulles was a religious fanatic. He believed that you had to defeat communism. It was a struggle between good and evil.
At CIA headquarters in the summer of 1953, Alan Dulles, the agency's director, recruits E. Howard Hunt as his propaganda chief in the plot.
Market days in Chichitenango, in the highlands of northwest Guatemala, are becoming a bit of a tourist attraction. The locals here are Mayan Indians. The people are poor, so their exotic handicrafts come cheap. You do see armed soldiers here and there, but after 36 years of guerrilla insurgency, the country is now at peace. Yet back in 1982, the tourists never came to Quiché province. What came rumbling up instead from Guatemala City was death.
On behalf of the rich oligarchy and backed by the fiercest army in the region, the Indians are being massacred. They're being cut to pieces, as if the army has come to see them as animals.
One of the few contemporary television accounts of the Western Hemisphere's most terrible 20th century atrocity. At the time, the Reagan administration dismissed such talk as wild exaggeration. But this American knows that genocide is just what happened. Dr. Clyde Snow, forensic anthropologist, is an expert on bones. And just 2.5 hours' flight away, there are boneyards in plenty.
It's hard to throw a rock around it out here without hitting a mass grave. There are a lot of them, unfortunately, and we've only really, in all the years of the teams that work down here, scratched the surface. It's hard to throw a rock around it out here and without hitting a mass grave around it. Out here, and without hitting a mass grave, it scratched the surface.
This week in Radical History for June 30th, perhaps the first massive slaughter in the New World. On this day in 1520, Claudio Conquistador Cortez massacres Montezuma and Aztec nobles. Also on June 30th, 1894, Chicago Tribune headlines describes the events of the Pullman strikes with obvious yellow journalism and anti-union rhetoric. The always venerable New York Times refers to agitator Eugene Debs as a lawbreaker and an enemy of the human race. Also for June 30th, 1909, a large meeting organized by the Free Speech Society is held in Cooper Union to protest the harassment of anarchist speaker Emma Goldman and to win back the rights of free speech. Eugene Debs is back in the news in this date in 1918 when he is arrested by the Wilson administration for his anti-war involvements. Also on June 30, 1934 in Germany, the Night of the Long Knives occurs when Hitler stages bloody purge of the Nazi Party. Jews, Unionists, Communists, Gypsies, and Gays to follow. Also on that date in 1952, let freedom ring. Congress passes McCarran-Walter Immigration Act to screen out, quote, subversive, unquote, aliens and deport them, even if they had become U.S. citizens. Following up on the McCarran Act with the Internal Security Act of 1950, one of the more scary provisions still in the books is being the authorization of concentration camps for when the government declares emergency situations. Also on June 30, 1965, the first U.S. ground actions begin in South Vietnam.
Foreign policy has very little to do with morality. And as long as any action can be justified by explaining that it was performed in the national interest, that will continue to be the case.
Also on June 30, 1971, I am not a crook, Tricky Dick Nixon orders felony burglaries of the Brookings Institute. This comes during a meeting of the National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger, Defense Secretary Malvin Lard, Attorney General John Mitchell, and Haldeman. Later, this group would propose a firebombing of the building. When this meeting is later exposed, future Nobel Peace Prize winner Henry Kissinger claimed he could not recall what was said in that meeting. Also on June 30, 1986, Georgia sodomy laws upheld by the Supreme Court 5-4 decision. Sodomy, a 1-to-20-year sentence, upheld as to homosexuals on the grounds that there is no fundamental federal constitution right to engage in sodomy. Sodomy laws were given names such as buggery, crimes against nature, sexual misconduct, unnatural sex, etc. Most laws are applied against homosexuals in order to further anti-gay discrimination. Sodomy laws resulted in imprisonment, parents losing custody of children, loss of jobs and homes, beatings, killings, and other atrocities. Sodomy laws are often used to deny basic rights of homosexuals. State-by-state laws were created to patchwork the penalties, which range from $50 fine in Arizona to life imprisonment in Idaho. Remember, you heterosexuals, God only allows a missionary position. Lastly, on June 30, 1998, Paris, a group of 100 people managed to enter the building of the Constitutional Council. One of them sees the original specimen of the Constitution, tears it up, and declares, "The dictatorship of capitalism is abolished." On this day in Radical History for July 1st, Switzerland, conspirator, anarchist, rival to Marx, and assassin of God, Mikhail Bakunin, dies on this date in 1876. Also for July 1st, 1892, Homestead Steel Mill strike begins in Pennsylvania, leading to large-scale battles between workers and anti-labor private police known as the Pinkertons.
In 1902, the United States concluded the suppression of the Philippine independence movement. The U.S. had supported Philippine independence fighters during the Spanish-American War, but after the archipelago and its inhabitants were ceded to the U.S. by Spain, the United States imposed a kind of colonial government there, and the Filipino nationalists waged a guerrilla war against the American occupiers. The U.S. sent over 100,000 troops to fight against the Filipinos. The resistance was quashed in 1902, and a new colonial regime was inaugurated, allowing the U.S. to declare on this day that the Philippine War had officially come to an end.
Also on July 1st, 1922, a 1-million-strong railroad shopmen's labor strike begins. Also on July 1st, 1970, Women Against Daddy Warbucks destroys 1A files and 8 New York City draft boards. Also on July 1st, 1972, I Am Not a Crook, Tricky Dick Nixon is recorded on tape with chief political aide the plotting of the break-in of the Republican National Committee headquarters. This is to divert attention from the Watergate break-ins. Our president is on tape suggesting that Bandel should tear the Republican offices to shambles. Remember, according to Nixon and our current president, anything the president does is legal. Also on July 1st, 1972, the first Rainbow Gathering takes place in Strawberry Lake, Colorado. Also on July 1st, 1977, Native American activist Leonard Peltier is sentenced to 2 life sentences for being somewhere in the general proximity of 2 FBI agents while attacking the American Indian Movement encampment. The FBI had been terrorizing the Lakota Reservation in a COINTELPRO operation for some time prior to the shootout. COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program, directed agents to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, and otherwise neutralize the activists and dissident movement and leaders. The FBI still holds over 6,000 pages which will not release to the Peltier's defense team for the claim that holds national security secrets.
In 1983, several thousand copper miners went on strike in the town of Clifton, Arizona, demanding better wages and working conditions. The largely Latino workforce was met with police raids and beatings and extra-legal arrests and detentions. Court injunctions prohibiting the mail workers from picketing drew the miners' wives to the front lines, where they too were attacked by the police. After fully a year, the strike was broken with the assistance of Arizona's Governor Bruce Babbitt, who mobilized the state's National Guard on the company's behalf.
This Week in Radical History for July 2nd, 1776. By constitutional statute, New Jersey gives all inhabitants of adult age with a net worth of $50 and residing in the county for 12 months the right to vote. In 1790, someone realized that this meant both men and women. The law was legal until 1807, when the new law limited the vote to free white males. Don't want those uppity women in black voting, do we? Yeah, let's go back to the original Founding Fathers' interpretation of the Constitution, shall we? Also for July 2nd, in the Promised Land, not if you're Native American, for on this date, in 1872, the second Colville Indian Reservation is created in eastern Washington when white pressure forces original reservation on better lands to be reopened for white non-Native American farmers. Your Promised Land is now kind of over there. No, not there, a little further. No, not by that tree. Over there by those rocks. There you go, ye engine. Also for July 2nd, 1881, while waiting for a train at a Washington railway station, President Jimmy Garfield is fatally shot. Back and to the left. Also on this date, 1946, blacks get to vote in the Mississippi Democratic primary for the first time. Richard Daniel, a black veteran, is arrested for attempting to register to vote in Mississippi, and then is beaten unconscious. In 1961, Ernest Hemingway, American writer, alleging CIA persecution, Ernest blows his brains out with a shotgun in Ketchum, Idaho. A few years back, a man high up in the CIA named Ray Klein was asked if the CIA, by its surveillance of protest organizations in the United States, was violating the free speech provision of the First Amendment. He smiled and said, "It's only an amendment." On this day in Radical History, 1970, Vietnam, exposure of the tiger cages at Khon San Prison, used by U.S.-backed South Vietnamese government to torture political prisoners. During the Vietnam War, prisoners who had been held at the prison in the 1960s said they were abused and tortured. When U.S. delegation arrived at the prison, they departed from the planned tour, guided by a map drawn out by a former detainee. The map led them to a door of the building. Inside, they found prisoners who were shackled within cramped tiger cages. Prisoners began crying out for water as the delegation walked in. They had sores and bruises, and some were mutilated. A photographer took photos of the scene, and photos were published in Life magazine. Along with the earlier disclosure of the My Lai massacre and later disclosures of the Pentagon Papers, the revelations of the conditions and the purpose of the Khon San Island prisons led to more Americans to believe that supporting the South Vietnamese government wasn't proper and they should oppose the war.
And in 2000, more than seven decades of single-party rule in Mexico came to an end with the election of former Coca-Cola Company executive Vicente Fox of the National Action Party, or PAN, who defeated a rival from the ruling PRI party. Fox campaigned on a platform of moderate social reforms, but quickly abandoned that pretense as he advocated for free trade agreements with the United States, which included the privatization of public businesses and land. Fox proposed an economic development plan for much of Latin America along the same model, but the Zapatista uprising in southern Mexico effectively halted Fox's agenda. And those are just some of the events in world history that took place on this day, July 2nd. This Day in History is a production of the Neighborhood Network in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis.
I would like to thank the Neighborhood Network of Columbus, Ohio, whose audio I'm borrowing for the show, and the Radio Roots crew from WBAI, New York. All awesome programs. Thank you guys very much. Now back to the show.
Groovy.
Also on July 3rd, 1835, children working in the silk mills in Paterson, New Jersey, strike for 11-hour workday and 6-day work week. With helps from adults, the kids win a compromise settlement of only a 69-hour work week. Also on July 3rd, 1917, 3 days of race riots end in East St. Louis, Illinois. As many as 200 African Americans were killed and hundreds wounded.
On this day in 1973, Pacifica radio station WBAI in New York broadcast comedian George Carlin's now famous routine, Seven Dirty Words You Can't Say on Radio or Television. The broadcast offended one New Yorker who complained to the Federal Communications Commission, which issued a reprimand to WBAI. The station mounted a legal defense for its First Amendment right to freedom of speech, and the trial went all the way to the Supreme Court, which, in a 5-4 ruling, determined that WBAI had indeed violated the law and declared Carlin's material to be indecent. The Supreme Court ruling granted the FCC broad discretion in determining what constitutes indecent material. And in 1988, a U.S. Navy ship shot down a civilian airliner over the Persian Gulf, killing 290 people. The airliner, which was on a routine scheduled commuter flight from Tehran to Dubai, was equipped with a transponder that identified it as a civilian plane. The Navy reported that it mistook the civilian jet as a military plane, and that after receiving no response to repeated warning broadcasts, it fired two missiles which destroyed the plane. The United States paid a $61 million settlement to Iran in 1996, but has never apologized for the incident.
This week in Radical History for July 4th, 1776. Some big country in North America unites and becomes the world's biggest colonial power ever to be known. Throwing off the shackles of King George, 230-some-odd years later, the people volunteer to put back on the shackles for another King George.
I'm the dictator.
Also on July 4th, 1854, pre-Newt Gingrich, as Congress introduced legislation banning constitutional burnings, William Lloyd Garrison publicly burns a copy of the U.S. Constitution with the cry, "So perish all compromises with tyranny." Also on July 4th, 1855, Walt Whitman, at age 36, America's first great poet, publishes his Leaves of Grass about his experience growing up in America and helping the wounded during the Civil War. I sing the body electric. People, the time has come.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Hannah George. On this day, July 4th in 1910, 22,000 spectators gathered in Reno, Nevada to watch the former white heavyweight championship James Jeffries fight Jack Johnson, the first black heavyweight champion. The all-white crowd screamed derogatory remarks throughout the whole match while the ringside band played "All Coons Look Alike to Me." Jeffries, who had publicly stated that he was only fighting to prove the superiority of whites, had to call it quits in the 15th round after being overpowered by Johnson. That night, in over 50 cities across America, small-scale riots occurred as the black community celebrated and enraged white people retaliated. Certain states even banned the filming of Johnson's victories over white fighters. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
The Philippines gained independence from the United States on this day in 1946. Well, sort of. Spain had claimed the Philippines and sold the islands and their inhabitants to the U.S. in 1898. Filipinos, used to resisting one colonial oppressor, soon turned their attentions to the next, and by the following year, a full-scale war ensued which lasted more than a dozen years and took the lives of an estimated 1 million Filipinos. Around 4,200 American troops were also killed. In 1946, after nearly 5 decades of American colonial rule, a contract was ratified granting conditional autonomy to the Philippines, but which limits the island's trade and preserves U.S. military bases there. It's July 5th, the day Venezuela celebrates its independence from Spain, which it declared in 1811. United States federal troops opened fire on civilians in Chicago on this day in 1894 as striking employees of the Pullman Railroad Company succeeded in bringing the Midwest rail traffic to its standstill. The workers, who had been protesting recent wage cuts and the company's union-busting attempt since the strike began in May, had enlisted nearly 50,000 picketers by the beginning of July. The rail company petitioned the federal government to intervene, and on July 5th, President Grover Cleveland ordered federal troops to Chicago to put down the strike. More than 40 rail workers were killed in the ensuing attack. 40 years later, in 1934, American troops again suppressed a strike with bullets, this time in San Francisco, as dock workers and Teamsters shut down the West Coast shipping operations demanding better working conditions. More than 40 longshoremen were killed when National Guard troops and company guards opened fire. Skirmishes continued for nearly a week, and unlike the Pullman strike of 1894, the San Francisco Maritime strike eventually forced shipping companies to accept arbitration, which resulted in a new and favorable contract. England adopted a national health care system on this day in 1948 to assure that all English citizens, regardless of immigration status, can enjoy comprehensive medical care free of charge. As detailed in the recent film by American filmmaker Michael Moore, a majority of industrialized nations consider health care to be a right, not a privilege that only those who can afford it can have access to. In these countries, the costs of health care are borne by the government and are funded through tax revenues. Contrary to popular myth, citizens in countries with universal health care are free to choose their own doctors and often receive services of much higher quality than those offered in countries with private, for-profit health care systems, according to the World Health Organization.
Lastly, for July 4th, 1983, Reverend Jerry Falwell says that AIDS, which he calls the gay plague, is God's way of spanking us. Well, spank this.
For a while, you know, black people couldn't marry white people. Women couldn't marry men without being their property. We've seen the progress of civil rights in America reflected through the right to be married. And so we affirm that right here today.
With this ring.
I thee wed.
This is my favorite part. By virtue of the authority vested in me as Deputy Commissioner of Civil Marriage, I now pronounce you married under the laws of the state of California.
No, Virginia, there is no Santa Claus, no Great Pumpkin, no Easter Bunny, and no Tooth Fairy. And as though that weren't bad enough, here's another shocker. The U.S. government has done some bad things over the years and will almost certainly continue to do them in the years ahead. Foreign policy has very little to do with morality. And as long as any action can be justified by explaining that it was performed in the national interest, that will continue to be the case. And so we give support to repressive governments in South Korea and Brazil and Chile because it is in our national interest to do so. We will supply sophisticated weapons to backward countries and betray an entire people like the Kurds, all because it is in our national interest. What may be difficult to accept is that there's nothing new about that. In fact, it's what we hire our Secretary of State and our Foreign Service to do for us. The myth is that since the First World War, we were ever able to conduct our foreign policy any other way. The United States is a superpower with enormous and divergent interests that it is committed to protect. And at best it is naive, at worst hypocritical, that they don't understand what's involved in that harsh reality. I'm Ted Koppel in New York.
Now you can go where they get things done. What you need.
This has been This Week in Radical History. Inspiration came from the Slingshot Organizer. Google the Slingshot Collective for more info. Radical info can be found at the Daily Bleed website. Google the Daily Bleed for more information. Until next week, from the Glee Glee Studios, I'm yours in the struggle, Mike Cannon. I close here with George Carlin.
I think the civil rights movement was an accommodation on the part of those who own the country. I think they see where their self-interest lies. They see a certain amount of freedom seems good, an illusion of liberty. Give these people a voting day every year so that they'll have the illusion of meaningless choice. Meaningless choice that we go like slaves and say, "Oh, I voted." Marginalized and made to seem either to be communist or was some sort of disloyal person, a kook, and now it's conspiracy. See, they've made that. Should not be even entertained for a minute that powerful people might get together and have a plan. Doesn't happen. You're a kook. You're a conspiracy buff. So, the only way you cure that, death, bloodshed. I don't advocate it, but I see that it's really the only way.
Hot. Cold. Hot. Cold.